All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? Do you guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars?
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, a t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Someday we'll all be free.
We didn't land on Geek Stuff. Geek Stuff landed on us.
So Geek Stuff X.
This is episode X.
Right. Right.
Geek Stuff episode X.
Because it's the 10th episode, right?
No, because X stands for the unknown. And when our geek forefathers were brought over here in bondage.
Stop. Oh, just stop. Just stop.
But what?
That's just awful.
What was wrong with that?
It was awful. Let's just get right into it. Oh, Mr. Fantastic, I'm not going to identify this as the news segment tonight, all right? So we're just going to get right into it. So getting right into it.
See how he takes criticism of himself? Not at all.
Not so much. So getting right into it then. First thing that I stumbled upon this past week.
See that, Fantastic? He's not taking your crap anymore.
That's right.
He's putting his foot down. He's saying,
from you.
You know what he's saying? He's saying, fuck the man. Fuck the man.
Damn,
that's what
man.
He's saying.
That's what I'm saying. Save the Empire. But getting right into it, the first thing I stumbled upon this past week was the Coraline movie, which I didn't even know was getting done. Coraline being the Neil Gaiman children's book.
Uh-huh.
So this would now be the second.
Well, it's not entirely a children's book.
I think it's solicited as a children's book.
A little spooky.
It is a little spooky. It's good, though.
I think his children's book is Wolves in the Walls.
And my daddy, what was the Goldfish book? Wasn't there?
Oh,
Neil Gaiman too?
Yeah, that was Neil Gaiman.
But I think Coraline is solicited as a children's book. I think I could be wrong.
Oh,
but needless to say, it's being made into a movie. So that's the second Neil Gaiman movie now that's being produced or worked on.
Really, second one?
Yeah, we talked about Stardust a couple episodes back is being done also.
And then there was Mirror Mask this year.
Correct. But I meant off of books that he had previously written. I think Mirror Mask was original.
And he did the English translation for Princess Mononoke.
He did. Talking about original books that he has written that are now becoming films, Coraline being the second one that we've talked about in this podcast.
Oh.
It's going to be stop-motion animation, which I guess depending on how it's handled, could be good, could be bad. If it's similar to how Tim Burton handles it, if you're a fan of Corpse Bride, Nightmare Before Christmas, could be really good. I'm kind of looking forward to it because Coraline's a great book. And like we said in the past, if you haven't read the Neil Gaiman stuff, you definitely should check it out.
James and the Giant Peach was good, too.
That wasn't Neil Gaiman. Oh, that was Tim Burton, though.
Was it
Tim Burton?
The animation was like that.
It was. It was stop motion as well. You're a dick.
What did I do?
Nothing.
I'm just trying to contribute.
Right. Well, anyway. Right. So HBO, apparently, it looks like they're trying to put together a Preacher miniseries. Have you heard about that yet?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, after Carnival failed, let's jump right into the same thing all over again, except this time the Preacher's the good guy.
Right. Well, at least they have something to base it on this time. It's got a fan following already.
Oh, a huge fan following.
Sure.
Glenn Fabry, I think, is the
it
artist.
It is Glenn Fabry.
I have
and, and
is, I have
well,
Glenn
no, Glenn Fabry was the... The artist, right? Wasn't he? Garth Ennis was the...
Yeah, I said. Glenn Faber was the artist.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you say that.
I have a Preacher sketch.
Do you? I've
you
never
can
seen
go
that.
To Big Kev's Critical Toys and check out that sketch.
No, you can't.
Someday.
Right. Someday.
Hey, the, you know, Mr. Fabulous. Mr.
Fantastic.
Mr.
Fantastic.
No, Fantastic's little brother, Fabulous.
Oh, okay.
He was here last night. and he was doing scans. So actually, the Big Kev's Critical Toys website, it's coming around. That's got a whole new attitude starting on Labor Day this week.
You mean Memorial Day?
This week. I mean
Labor Day would be September. That's probably a little bit more accurate.
Shut up. No, it's being totally revamped. It's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that so fantastic?
That is not so.
No?
We're not revamping anything.
Well, you know what I mean. You know, we're getting it up and running.
There has to be something there already.
We're going
to
put some content in
That's it. That's it. What he said. We're going to put content in
Pen to paper.
That's
Ooh.
It. There's going to be...
Big thoughts.
No. There's going to be a daily update.
Really?
Daily update.
And are you going to do something daily?
I am going to do something daily.
Wow.
Yep. It's true. And Fantastics, working on getting the sketches and other things up. Yeah, it's going to be good. We're going to work on that archive thing.
Right.
That I told you about.
Sure.
That also appears on that site. People are very excited about it.
Sure.
It'll be good.
All right. Well, in this segment that is not the news, what do you have for us tonight?
Wow, way to put me on the spot. Way to rub it into Fantastic, too.
You guys are bastards. I can't help
it. You guys? I didn't do anything.
You always get blamed for shit that I do,
I
love it.
Always. I didn't do anything.
Makes my life easier.
You made him like this, that's why.
I didn't. I made him. Well, that's true, but I didn't make him like this.
I'm your Frankenstein.
I molded him in my own image. Well, you know, the big DC event that's going on right now is this whole After Crisis, Infinite Crisis business.
Sure.
The book called 52, it's a weekly book coming out, one every week for the entire year. That's supposed to fill the gap between the end of Crisis and what the DC books are going through now, which is called the 1 year later.
Okay.
Which all the major books are now set 1 year ahead. And this 52 is supposed to help you.
Fill in
the gaps.
Okay.
Right? Even though it really, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense what DC's doing. I mean, I guess it kind of does, but it kind of really doesn't. Because what they're doing is they're saying, okay, a year has passed since the events of Crisis, Infinite Crisis. But the year, the 1 year later books started to come out before the end of Crisis. So that was one bit of confusion right there. Then the second bit of confusion now comes with 52, because 52 is supposed to fill in all of these things that happen in a world without Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, or whatever their pitch is.
Right.
That this is supposed to fill those gaps, so to speak.
Right.
And, yes, fantastic.
I am confused. What's the big crisis?
Oh, forget it. We don't have enough show to even try to explain.
Give me one sentence. Is it a it's a world without superheroes?
Did you ever read Crisis on Infinite Earths?
No.
Then forget it. It would take me an hour to explain it. Trust me. Just trust me.
Well, this is part of that whole thing that we talked about a couple weeks back, where like Superboy dies and a whole bunch of others.
Yeah, and then there's other universes. Yeah, oh my God. See, you're going to make me do it. You're going to make me go back to the 80s where I don't want to go.
It sounds terrible.
It's
don't even
not
bother.
You know what? Whether it's terrible or not is immaterial. The fact that, as I was saying, this book 52 is supposed to fill in these gaps.
Right.
Of the year that's missing, because all the books are now 1 year later. However, by the time 52 ends, all of these other books will be 12 issues later. And who the hell will remember?
Right.
I mean, it's a gamble that I don't think is going to pay off. But in any event, the bit of the news here is you might want to check out 52thecomic.com. That's the number 5, the number 2, thecomic.com. It's a website designed especially as an accompaniment. Website designed especially as an accompaniment. I can't say that word.
You stink. Accompaniment.
It's to go along with.
There you go.
The series, which allows fans to enter the fictional world of 52 and see how the DCU progresses without Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, blah, 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 the whole pitch. It's supposed to be like a real-world news magazine would if it existed in the DCU.
So it's filler for a filler storyline.
Right. It's kind of more gray matter. It's kind of news. You know, it's kind of like you can read headlines of the Daily Planet as written by Clark Kent and Lois Lane.
There's an ad at the bottom for Lex Oil.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, you opened it up already? Oh, I didn't think it was running yet. Oh, well, there it is.
That's awful.
And you can find out if the Gotham Knights, which is the baseball team, how the scorers are doing. It's kind of...
hokey?
Yeah, but they're also going to give you some exclusive interviews with Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, Rucka, Wade, the other guys, and the artists who are writing all of this stuff, who are trying to keep all of this together. Some art will be on there that won't be available anything else, some storyboards and things like that. And some other things, too. It's kind of a good idea. I just think it's coming at kind of a, it's kind of another element to this whole experiment, which I don't think is starting out very good to begin with, and I don't think this is going to help.
You know what it looks like to me? I told you the other day, I just got done reading The Watchmen. It's kind of like that filler text that's in The Watchmen, you know, gives you a little background
right.
and stuff like that. However, looking at this is not nearly as well done, and as soon as you look at it, you can tell this is like art from a DC comic book rather than art made
right.
specifically for this site. It just, you know, breaks that whole mystique that a newspaper would have, making you feel like you were reading a story
right.
like you were actually in the universe.
Well, maybe they just launched and they're aiming to go in that direction but haven't quite gotten there yet.
It's a website so bad it looks like I made it.
Wow.
Wow, you mean it looks like Critical Toy?
Shh.
Oh.
Did I?
Well, just kidding. That's a great website.
I think the interesting part about this book in general is going to be to see how well it lasts. I mean, 52 weeks, an entire year's worth of story arc. Has that been done? Where it's
sure.
spanned a full year like
sure.
that? Without
well,
it breaking up into some
in
similar
a,
little
in a,
bits and pieces?
In a weekly thing? I don't know. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I mean, they've had books go for a year, but they were monthly.
Right.
You know, like Long Halloween.
Right, right,
and
right.
all those all those Sale and Loeb books are always like that. Oh, well, I don't know. They don't all go 12 issues, but that one
12
did.
Issues,
Dark
yeah.
Victory, I think, was the sequel to
I thought
that.
52 issues is just, it's a lot of content. It's a lot of content. It's going to seem like they're going to start, you know, they run the risk of starting to focus on some very kind of
Well, we're already two. We're already 2 or 3 weeks in.
Yeah, I know.
And quite frankly, I've read them and I don't see it as offering me much as the reader.
Right.
But then again, I'm still so baffled by everything that's going on. I'm not an idiot, you know, but
sure.
this whole DC thing is rather baffling.
Okay.
As opposed to the much simpler, Marvel Civil War,
simpler.
Of which I am holding issue one right now.
Simpler's a way to put that.
Yes,
way to put that.
Simpler's a way to put it. I mean, say this much for DC. Yes, they are doing the same thing as Marvel or vice versa. They're doing the same thing as each other.
Right.
They're taking an event that happened
right.
somewhere in their past
right.
and they are then one-upping, trying to one-up that event. Crisis on Infinite Earths happened in 1980-something and... And now it's so many years later, and this fallout from Infinite Crisis, this fallout, which is Infinite Crisis, is happening 1 year
right.
later. All that stuff is kind of all this big thing.
Right.
Marvel Civil War, however, which purports to be, you know, this great original concept, is not at all. It
no.
is the Mutant Registration Act, which was... What, first mentioned in 1981?
Yeah, Uncanny 141.
Something mentioned for
like
the
that.
First time, the Mutant Registration Act, where it said that mutants were dangerous because they had powers and that the government needs to know who has these powers. So they wanted all the mutants to register, right? And there was a lot of hubbub about should they register, shouldn't they register, and so on and so forth. Now, why in 1981 it didn't dawn on anybody that, well, why would you only register mutants? What about other people who have superpowers?
Right.
Now, of course, it's 20 years later or 25 years later or whatever it is, and they are now saying, oh, wait a minute. Maybe all superpowered beings should be identified and registered and so that they know who they are, secret identities and so on.
Well, I read government. Issue one. Yeah. I read issue one, and overall I didn't hate it. I actually thought that once you got past the first maybe five or six pages of it, it was pretty good. It seemed all right. It seems like it's going to be all right if they handle it right. But my biggest problem is the setup. The first five or six pages of it, it seems very rushed. It seems very, very quick to launch a story. There doesn't seem much of a build. Yes, the event that launches this whole new registration is huge. You know, innocent people dying.
Right.
You know, a superpower going berserk and killing off all these people. Yes, but the buildup to it just seems so... boom, boom, boom story. There's not enough. I don't know. There doesn't seem
actually,
enough
I,
there.
I rather like them sacrificing an entire superhuman team. I mean, they're all dead.
Yeah. Well, that part doesn't bother me. It's just.
And the fact that it's the new Warriors makes me happy because then we never have to see Speed. Unless somebody survived. I don't think that they named who specifically survived.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Nitro.
Well, he was a villain. I thought somebody.
No, I thought he was the only one that's... I don't know. I have to go back and reread it. But
I thought one of the new Warriors survived.
I much would have rather it have been the Young Avengers. Because fuck the Hulkling. That's all I'm saying. Oh, and Asgardian.
Oh, wait. I think Mr. Fantastic would like to chime in now that you've brought up the Young Avengers.
I read it. First
and,
two.
And?
I like it.
Oh, I hate you.
No, I do. I like it.
You are Mr. Fabulous.
Is it that you like it, or is it that you want to find out where they're going to go with it?
Yes.
See, that's where I'm at. I want to see. Wait a minute. It's like a train wreck.
Okay.
Oh my God. What could they? Where could they possibly go with this? And I already gave some of the spoilers away for issues three and four, even though I don't have them yet, about the Hulk being the Hulkling being a Skrull.
Right.
And so on.
You know, I've dumped so much money into books in the past years that my interest in seeing where a storyline's going to go, if I'm not satisfied with the storyline, it's just not there anymore. I no longer feel the need to continue storylines that aggravate me that quick in. And if it turns out that it's this amazing, great story and everybody loves it and it's huge... huge in the Marvelverse, I'll pick up the trade paperback.
See, I'm almost the exact opposite. Last week or 2 weeks ago, Kevin read the back of the box, which gave a synopsis of the storyline. I read the first two issues, got to the end of the first issue, and was surprised. Let's put it that way. Because I just totally forgot what it was. And I got to say, I was hooked.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't feel good about it.
Well, the trade of the first story arc is out, but I don't have it yet.
Okay, well.
And I hear that three and four are hard to come by, so I guess I'm going to have to get that trade.
Right.
But I want to see where they go in the first story arc to establish these characters.
Right. It's just,
I might bail on it after that. I still think it's a shitty concept.
It's just frustrating to me because there are concepts out there that have been done that are so well done. There are concepts that are similar where you're using, you know, different types of characters from different universes that are similar and are done so well. The Exiles was fantastic. The Exiles was fantastic from the launch. I mean, and it's continued to be a great book.
Uh-huh.
I just don't see this having the type of legs that The Exiles does.
Okay.
It's my personal opinion. But... since we're talking about things that, you know, kind of may not be doing so well, let's talk about the Aquaman television show, Mercy Reef. Actually, there's nothing to talk about because it didn't get picked up.
Nice.
CW, the new network, the combination of whatever it is,
WB
and UPN, did not pick it up. After a pilot, I believe, was filmed and there was all this prep work put into it and all this hype around it. It looks like it's going to go nowhere. Now, I don't know if it's being shopped around, but you're not going to see it on CW.
Good.
So.
Good. It's going to stink.
Yeah. Probably.
It is.
Probably.
It's, you know what? And Smallville has all this huge following and everything. I don't understand that either.
Well, Smallville's actually doing really well. There was just a huge push and resurgence in the ratings and everything.
That's what I'm saying. I don't understand it. I don't think it's that good.
My dad likes Smallville.
Your dad likes Smallville?
Yeah.
Senior Fantastic likes Smallville?
Senior Fantastico.
You know, there are a lot of people that got behind Smallville that were not traditional comic book fans. There was an appeal there to people who were not traditionally in our group.
Yeah, but it's because he's cute. He's so hot.
You want to hear something in that vein disturbing? My dad
thinks he's cute.
He told me that I should aspire to have a body like whoever that is. What's his name?
That guy.
The guy who plays Clark Kent.
I can't even remember his name right now.
He's like, he's got a nice body. You should have a body like that.
When did your dad become Columbo? Has he always been Columbo?
Excuse me, ma'am. One more thing.
Just one more.
Before I go. Yeah.
Wow. Why do I think the new promo this week is going to have a celebrity guest voice by Columbo? Him and George Takei have the same agent, maybe.
Hi. Welcome.
But anyway, I'm going to move right past Mercy Reef. I'm going to let it sink like the CW did.
Good.
And I'm going to move into a bit of toy news, which is that McFarlane Toys has apparently acquired a license to do Lost figures. Now,
Wait. Like action figures?
Well, figures. Whether or not they're action figures is another story.
It's McFarlane.
It is McFarlane.
We'll have a lot of action.
Exactly. But that's okay. You probably don't need a lot of action if that's what they're going to do.
Yes, I see.
I haven't found anything official on McFarlane's site that says as such, but that seems to be the buzz. If that's the case, that's going to be huge.
If they do Libby, I'll buy one.
They might do Libby. She was a tally. I'm sure that she'll be in there somewhere.
I doubt it.
If they're going to do Anna Lucia. Yuck.
Are they?
Got to do Libby. I'm guessing they're going to do Anna Lucia. Then nothing's been announced as far as what figures will be done or anything.
And I'll buy what's her name, too. Evangeline Lilly. Because she's hot.
It's true.
Cynthia Watros, Evangeline Lilly, I'm buying.
Yes, I saw Hurley walking into Trump Tower and Hotel in Lincoln Center. I went to the Apple Store 24/7 opening, grand opening around, I guess, 12 midnight. And just saw him walking around in a very unkempt pants, and it didn't look like the guy's ever had a haircut.
So he's kind of Hurley both on and off the show. Well, maybe he's trying to maintain that Hurley appearance.
Probably not allowed to cut his hair.
Continuity reasons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would be my guess. But I like Hurley. Hurley's actually probably my favorite character on the show next to Locke.
He's big. Going to be a lot of plastic in that figure.
Yeah.
They've
done it before. Yeah, I was going to say.
They've done
but
bigger.
The most important part about this is kudos to McFarlane for finally picking up a license that will sell pretty well, I think. I think in the past they've had some troubles with some of the licenses that they've picked up, and they kind of end up being peg warmers. For example, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and
the remake.
Those just ended up being peg warmers. I mean, you still find them someplace, places, you know?
Yeah, but you know, that's like the only Jessica Biel action figure out there.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
You need that Jessica Biel action figure to have it kit-bashed into Whistler's daughter from Blade 3.
Okay.
I have to get that
done. But the Jessica Biel figure sold, but the rest of them just sat there.
What about Arlie Ermey?
I'm telling you, they didn't do that well. We hardly moved any in the store that I work in occasionally. We hardly moved any. Mm-hmm. So, but the Lost figures, I think it's huge. I think the license is huge, and I really hope that it's true. I really hope that McFarlane got it, because I think it's going to do really well.
And speaking of lines that would do really well.
Right.
That brings us to Star Wars Unleashed.
Ooh, sorry.
Yeah. Line that would have done well had they not screwed it up.
Right.
But in a last-ditch effort to give us something satisfying and tasty,
okay,
Hasbro has decided to release one more line of the six-inch-ish Unleashed figures.
The good Unleashed.
Yes, the molded statuaries.
Right.
Super detailed statuary figures. And we have them here.
We do. We have all three of them.
Yes. It's Han.
As a stormtrooper.
As a stormtrooper. Chewbacca, which is the same Chewbacca they've already done with episode three accessories.
Right.
And the...
Another clone trooper, right?
Yeah.
A shock trooper.
Shock trooper. That's the one with the red.
It's the, got the red highlights on him and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I have the Han Solo figure for a couple of different reasons, but before I say why...
Is it because you couldn't get a stormtrooper from the last line?
That's one of the reasons. I actually have mine open right now in full stormtrooper gear with part of the base removed in hopes that I'll eventually get another Solo and in hopes that it's a lot easier to find than the stormtrooper figure that I'm never going to get, apparently. But why these three figures make me angry is because it just replants the seed in my mind how great a line this is.
Exactly.
And how much more I want to see from it. And it's a shame to think that these three are the last three. Because, to be honest with you, only two of them are really decent. Chewie's really kind of a waste, in my personal opinion. I mean, in the last wave, you could have done something better. I mean, please. Yeah.
Well, what you could have done was a figure that you haven't done already.
Exactly.
And stick a new gun in his hand and a... Whatever the Wookiee shield,
you know,
or
what?
Whatever it is.
If you wanted to do a Wookiee, or even if you wanted to preserve some maybe a portion of the mold, at least do a different Wookiee. Do what was that? What was the other Wookiee's name? Tarful.
Like, Tarful.
Tarful. Do Tarful. You know, he's got a helmet. He's got a different gun. At least it'd be a little different. You could probably maintain most of the sculpt if that was a concern.
Right. Or what they could do is a character that deserves to be done. Like, I don't know.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. There's not a need for another Chewbacca figure.
Right.
I would call that one Surf and Safari Chewy.
Nice.
Looks like he has a Wookiee surfboard.
It's like a tiki surfboard, kind of. Put that thing down and catch some wicked waves on Kashyyyk.
Surf and Safari repeat, yeah. Wookiee.
On the beaches of Kashyyyk.
Chewy.
Anyway, it's just angering. It's really angering and frustrating. But grab them while you can. If you can find them, good luck. We found them this past weekend.
Oh, we didn't find them.
At a con. Well, I found them this past weekend at a con.
Toy Mike found them.
Yeah, but I got mine from Toy Mike at the con.
Toy Mike is a god. You know, we're going to have Toy Mike in here, not next week, but the week after.
Yeah? Well, that's cool. That's cool.
To talk about the black market.
Well, he's the since he is the black market, that's perfect.
Hey, but you know.
Kind of works. Hey, he works to our benefit.
He's
I'm not knocking
a scumbag in the black
not
market.
Not at all. Toy Mike.
They all hate him for not being a scumbag.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, nice, right?
Good for him. So I think that's about it for now.
For what?
For the segment that is not the news segment.
Good, good.
It's the information segment.
You can be taught.
It's the first segment. It's not a segment at all. It's really just some witty banter between two geeks.
Really? What's he?
Half a geek.
Half a geek. Matt, we are going to Wizard World Philly.
That's right, Kev. We're going to be there Saturday, June 3rd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
That's right. We'll be there. We'll be answering questions, hanging out, talking geek stuff, and signing autographs.
It's true. It's true.
And you can come down, visit us. We'll have some cool materials and give away things from other things that maybe I am associated with.
Right, right.
And we'll be there to answer your questions, hear your feedback, and hopefully to meet as many of you as we can.
That's right. For more information, you can go to wizarduniverse.com, and you can also check out the appearances link at the home site, www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com.
And we're back on Geek Stuff with the top 100 trade paperbacks of all time.
Now, this was given away, this book that you're referencing here was given away at Free Comic Book Day. Is that correct?
Right. It was produced by Wizard Magazine.
Right.
And it's the top, in addition to being the top 100 trades of all time, there's also other lists, too. Like, they have some silly covers. They have funniest moments in comics. I mean, it's all, obviously, it's very subjective, funniest character and so on. But the real meat of the issue here is the 100 greatest trade paperbacks of all time.
Not toys?
No.
I figured, you know, it's a trade paperback magazine, so they should probably put some toy stuff
in it. Yeah, I know. They couldn't pick 100 top toys. Yeah, you know what the 100 top toys are? It's all the ones that were one per case over the last 4 years.
Let's not start this.
Don't get me started.
Stick to the graphic novels.
You're going to get me started,
Wait,
right?
Is it graphic novels or is it trade paperbacks? Because there's a distinction. There's a difference.
It says trade paperbacks.
Okay.
So.
Because I define them differently. So I don't know if they do.
Well, let's see what you define it as.
Well, I think that a trade paperback is a collection of issues that were once released individually, now for either the mass market or for people that may have missed them originally, as opposed to a graphic novel, which is a singular self-contained story issued in one volume. That's available in stores and retailers.
Huh.
Would you concur?
I don't know.
Ding, ding. I would.
Would you?
Yeah.
Then we're going to have a big problem with this list.
Well, that's why I was asking. I'm guessing that there's probably a mixture of both in there.
All right. Well, let's do all 100 starting at number 100.
Let's not.
Why? We'll do one per minute. It'd be the longest episode ever.
Let's pick a few select ones that really got under your skin, because I know there are a couple.
Let's just pick the top 10.
Okay, that's fine.
And, you know, and then we'll pop around and see what's missing.
Okay.
Because I don't necessarily agree with this top 10.
Even at one per minute, it wouldn't make this the longest episode ever.
It would be if we commented on each one.
That's
see?
True.
See? Ha. Think you know everything.
You're not getting it.
No, you're not getting it.
And number 10 is...
Number 10, X-Men The Dark Phoenix Saga.
Okay. Great story. Would I put it in the top 10 of all time?
No fucking way.
I don't know.
Top 100? Yes. Top 10?
I don't know. That's probably one of the best X-Men stories ever.
When you see what isn't in the top 10,
okay,
you will disagree.
Okay.
Okay? Let's move on.
What's number 9?
X-Men Dark Phoenix Saga number 10. Number 9 would be Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
That would be something I've never read.
Right.
And I'm unfamiliar with. So I can't say whether or not that's good or not. Have you read that?
Yes, unfortunately.
Who's it by? Does it give that kind of information? Writer, artist...
It was DC prepared to start Superman from scratch in 1986. The publisher wanted to send off the old Man of Steel that had been around since 1938. Writer Alan Moore and Supes face off with Lex Luthor and Brainiac in A Fortress of Solitude a final time, leaving every reader with a tear in their eye. Bittersweet goodbye to Superman continuity in order to pave the way for a revamped Man of Steel. Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow worked as a nostalgic nod to a simpler past and look forward to all the comics could be, said Sojourn scribe Ron Mars. Wow.
Okay.
Could they find a less relevant person to comment on it?
Okay. So the question I have to ask was Superman A Man for All Seasons, was that ever collected in a trade?
Oh, now you're looking ahead.
Oh, am I?
Or are you?
I didn't know. I don't know if I'm looking ahead. But what I wanted to say was, if it's not in the top 10, then I don't know, because I don't know what the
top
10 are.
So here's the reasoning here, I think, is that this was the end of the Superman continuity from 38.
Okay.
This is when John Byrne did the Man of Steel series. Uh-huh. And it basically wiped all that clear.
Right.
So the Superman we have today, although he had all those adventures, had this different start.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. And I think the fact that Alan Moore wrote it.
Right.
I think kind of catapults it. I mean, it is what it is. It's the last Superman story of that era, let's say.
Top 10, though?
No way.
Okay.
Barely top 100. But Alan Moore kind of pushes it into that category.
Right.
I think. But top 10? No way. And like I said, the book you just mentioned, uh-huh, Superman for All Seasons, not in the top 10.
See, now that's what I wanted to know. But I don't know if that was collected, so it might not qualify. But personally, out of the smattering of Superman that I've read throughout the years, that is probably the best Superman story I've ever read. And Loeb and Sale did a brilliant job on that book, even though it was only four issues, I think.
Superman for All Seasons, number 23.
Yeah, see, I would have put that much lower on the list, I think. Maybe not in the top 10, but definitely lower than 23. Probably in the top 15.
Yeah, 23.
Yeah. Okay. So far, we don't agree with most of this list.
So far.
Right.
What's
number 8?
Number 8 is Marvels.
Really?
Yeah.
See, now, I always thought that Marvels, I read it, it was okay, but I always thought that Marvels was considered a failure almost, wasn't it? It didn't really get a lot of, I didn't think that it did as well as they had wanted it to do. And again, I don't know. See, I don't know that I'd put it in the top 10.
See, this is where you and I will disagree.
Okay.
Because I think it should be in the top 10.
Yeah.
For starters, it's Alex Ross's greatest Marvel work.
Right.
Right? What it is it's kind of a history of the Marvel Universe as told from a photographer's, kind of a newspaper photographer's point of view. And so what you're looking at is a lot of the major Marvel Universe events.
Right.
You know, when they had continuity.
No.
I know.
I was alive then.
I can't barely remember it myself, but it's all the, it's one human being, one character perspective of Marvel history.
Right.
Having lived through it.
Okay.
This character is, you know, witness to all these great events that, you know, that we don't, you know, it's interesting in that it's a perspective that is not ever explored.
Okay.
You know, who explores the perspective of one normal man's life with all of these extraordinary things going around? I mean, that right there would be the subject for an ongoing book.
Right.
You know, an ongoing comic book set in any universe with decent continuity. So let's see. Marvel's out. DC's currently out. Well, it's too bad. It would have been a great book 20 years ago.
Right.
A great concept for a book 20 years ago when there was continuity. But nowadays, unfortunately, thanks to people like Joe Quesada, it's a rather irrelevant
okay
kind of thing. However, Marvels as a trade paperback definitely deserves top 10.
Okay.
Especially the one they're talking about in here, which I think is the slip case, has all sorts of sketch material and so on. It's a nice presentation.
Okay. So that was number 8, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, what's number 7?
Number 7 is Daredevil Born Again.
Right.
It's the Frank Miller, Dave Mazzucchelli storyline that the Kingpin learns that Daredevil is Matt Murdock. Hmm. And it's the kind of gritty, tough characterization storytelling kind of thing that paved the way for, well, according to Matt Haley, the artist of The Order, where do they find the most irrelevant people to comment on these things? Wait. He says that once I found the Born Again trade paperback, I kept it on my drawing table. It's the single best superhero treatment I've ever read because it was a personal story. Who cares?
What year was that?
What year was the trade?
Yeah. Or what was the year with the original issues? Does it say?
80s.
Oh, it was the 80s.
Okay. Yeah, it has to be. Miller and Mazzucchelli has to be a long time ago.
The 80s. Was it before or after Dark Knight? Do you know?
Before.
Before?
Yeah. I would say.
I don't know. That's why
I think I'm right. And there's a mic.
You're the expert.
There's a mic in front of me.
Right.
So. I say it's before.
Okay.
And so it is. We're moving on. Oh, so what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
Great story. Top 10? No. Deserve to be in top 100? Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Number six, Batman Year One. Absolutely, unquestionably deserves to be in the top 100. Deserves to be in the top 10. Probably should be in the top 5.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Year one was really well done. Where does Dark Knight, I know I'm skipping ahead, but does Dark Knight fall anywhere in there in the top
10? No, Dark Knight is not in the top 10.
See, I don't know that I would have put Year One in the top 10 and not Dark Knight.
I think Year One is a better story than Dark Knight.
I don't know. Well, yep. Well, this is where we differ.
Nope, it is.
Oh, I have a mic in front of me also, so I am an expert as well. I don't know that I would have put Dark Knight in there or Year One in there over Dark Knight.
This is the, again, it's Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli telling the first year of Batman being Batman.
Okay.
And it's kind of it's a fantastic story. Every reason whatsoever to be in top 100, top 10, probably top 5.
Sure. So Death in the Family has to be in there too somewhere, right?
No.
Not in the top 100 at all.
Not in the top 100 at all.
That's a travesty.
Yes, but it is a travesty. I totally agree with you. It should be in here. It may have replaced some classics like Batman Dracula, which made it in.
Yuck.
Or Batman Huntress, which made it in.
Where was Batman Huntress on that list?
Batman Huntress is actually number 83.
Wow.
Yeah, there's just some junk.
But Death in the Family
list
isn't in there.
No.
Somebody must have a personal vendetta against somebody. Well, we should just move on. We're up to the top 5 now, I think, right? So what's number 5?
It's Dicko distracting me over
here. Yeah, he does that sometimes. Don't let him distract you. Be strong.
All right, number 5 is Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1.
Ultimate Spider-Man?
Ultimate Spider-Man.
In the top 10.
It's the big Marvel hardcover that collects the first 19 issues.
I don't know. That's an interesting Spider-Man story to put in the top 10. I think that there are better Spider-Man stories in the classics.
Well,
than that. No?
I don't. Again, not in my top 10.
Well, no, but you know what though? Maybe as a launch to, maybe as the storyline that really launched the Ultimate line. Wasn't Ultimate Spider-Man the first Ultimate book? Wasn't
yes.
it? So it serves a purpose. I could see. I don't know if I'd put it in the top 10. And I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. And I'm especially a huge Ultimate Spider-Man fan. I don't know that I'd put it in there, though.
I don't know. I'm trying to look and see if there are other Spider-Man.
There is another one in the top 10. I think the Venom introduction storyline is somewhere in the top 10. I was thumbing through that earlier.
No, it isn't.
It's not? Oh, nope. I thought I had seen that in there.
You apparently are crazy.
Apparently. Well, I don't know. It is Wizard, the Leonard Maltin of everything. So
Spider-Man Nothing Can Stop Juggernaut is number 28.
Okay.
What the heck is that?
I have no idea. But who cares, really, when you think about it?
Spider-Man's willing to die if that's what it takes. With just 2 issues of Amazing Spider-Man, Roger Stern and John Romita Jr. weave the ultimate tale of Spidey's refusal to back down from the most overwhelming of obstacles, namely Juggernaut. After dragging Spidey through a collapsing building and pummeling him relentlessly, Juggernaut discovers that Spider-Man may be more unstoppable than he is. Holy crap! Quote, holy crap, could Stern write Spider-Man, enthuses Kingdom Come writer Mark Waid? I still remember exactly where I was, even the couch I was sitting on when I read part one of that story. It made me love the Juggernaut forever. End quote.
That should be taken out. Put Death in the Family in. Let's move on to number 4.
Why, is Fantastic telling us that we're running long?
No, I don't pay attention to him anymore.
Obviously, Mr. Fantastic doesn't realize that we need to
Fantastic
stretch.
Is playing with the Gimli figure over there from the 12-inch scale.
And I'm really playing with it, too. Like, I'm moving it in ways and making noises like he's swinging the axe in my head.
You really are a
axe.
Boob.
And my axe.
Oh, great. Another celebrity impression. What's number 4?
All right, number 4 is Sandman Volume 4, Season of Mists.
Okay. Now, I agree with the Sandman graphic novel being in there, or trade paperback being in there, however you want to define it. I don't know if I'd pick that one.
This is the one where Satan leaves hell and wants Sandman to run it.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I thought the, as far as Sandman storylines go, and I don't remember which one it was. I want to say it was number two, perhaps. The one where they pretty much do the Midsummer Night's Dream throughout it, and Puck is a character in it, and whatnot. I think that was a much stronger story than that one. Although that one was definitely, I mean, it's hard to argue that any of the Sandmans don't belong in here.
Taken as a whole, Gaiman's Sandman stories together belong in the top 10 as one, if
but
you take them as one.
But
volume.
It's never been collected.
Well, it's never been collected
volume.
That way, but it's kind of like saying, yeah, I like Back to the Future 3.
Right.
But then not the other two. You have to consider them as a unit.
Right, but some of them do stand well on their own. I mean,
I'm not saying they don't.
There is a continuity to them, and there is a story arc that runs through all of them, but some of them do
obviously,
stand better on their own.
Obviously a DC book.
Well, yeah. Well, a Vertigo book.
Right. Number three, Batman The Dark Knight Returns 10th Anniversary Edition.
Now, they're actually specifically picking out the 10th Anniversary Edition as opposed to...
Other editions. Well, this is the slipcase edition that has, obviously, the whole story. It also comes with Frank Miller's original plot script to issue 4, which had a different ending.
Right.
A lot of articles about The Dark Knight Returns from Rolling Stone and Spin, the sketchbook. I mean,
so
it's a nice package.
So this is really more than just quality of story and artwork. It's also... presentation,
well, you
and raping of the buyer.
Well, you need to consider these things.
Well,
presentation
see,
is there's a lot to presentation.
See, if I was putting together a list like this, I don't think that I would put the presentation, slipcover, hardcover, paperback, not. I don't think I'd take that into account. I really think that it should be the quality of the story and the quality of the artwork that carries the book to be on that list.
Okay, I'll put this to you then.
Okay.
Calvin and Hobbes softcover book that you buy at the used bookstore, or the complete Calvin and Hobbes hardcover nice slipcase set?
But for different reasons.
But do you not consider that? I'm just asking you, which one is nicer?
Personally, I'd rather have the bigger one.
Okay,
now
I have a follow-up question.
But that has nothing to do with the story.
I have a follow-up question. Okay. My follow-up question is, if you were putting... A list together of the top two Calvin and Hobbes collected books, which would be number one?
Yeah, I guess.
Why?
I don't know. I guess because it's prettier, but...
Because of presentation.
But if I had to pick a Calvin and Hobbes collection to go on a top 10 list, I would pick the Attack of the Deranged Killer Monster Snow Goons collection, because I personally think that's the best out of all of the individual ones that were released, and I'd rather have that on a list because it specifically pulls out a story arc as opposed to the big collection.
Right. This is what I'm saying. This is not we can't just judge story here because they didn't.
Okay.
You know, we're basing it on their list, and okay. I think you're gonna be surprised at what number one is.
Okay.
Because we all know what we think it should be.
Sure.
And it should be.
Sure.
Did I say what number three was? Number three is Dark Knight Returns 10th anniversary.
You just said that, yep.
Want to take a stab at what's number two?
What do you think number one should be?
Number one should be...
Because that's number two.
Okay. So what you're saying is that The Watchmen is not number one.
Kevin?
The Watchmen is not number one.
Okay. So The Watchmen is obviously number two.
Number two.
So then number one, I would hope then, should be what I consider probably the second best. It should be V for Vendetta.
And it isn't.
Is V for Vendetta... So V for Vendetta not in the top 10, which I think is a travesty then. Let's get that out of the way. I'm hoping it's somewhere in the top 100, although I'm not going to ask you to find it in there right now. But what the hell is number one?
I'm looking to see if V is here. Give me 1 second.
It's there. It's got to be there.
Yeah, those two books, in my personal opinion, belong in those two spots.
Keep guessing number one.
Keep guessing all day. You won't get it.
It's got to be something obscure.
Uh-huh.
It's obscure.
It's done by Wizard. It's not done by Wizard. This sort of thing is done by Wizard to create discussions like the one we're having right now. They do it on purpose.
Okay. I can't even fathom what it would be.
Well, let's talk about number two.
Okay.
Number two is The Watchmen, obviously.
Sure.
And it's the Graffiti Designs hardcover of Watchmen.
Okay.
Which is, again, a beautiful slipcase edition.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And, again, it's the usual concept sketches by Gibbons, all the art, and obviously the great story. It's a nice package.
Okay.
Which I've said about every one of these.
Well, you have.
Some of them. And this is number two.
Okay. So, now getting back to this mystery that is number one, although the mystery was just spoiled because you had the book folded and I saw what it was. And I'm surprised now.
Cheater.
It was in my face. How could you miss that symbol? Of all the symbols.
Well then
how
let's...
How could you miss that? No, wait. I just want to say something because now that I know what it is, I know another thing that it's not. How is Kingdom Come not in here?
In the top 10?
In the top 10. How is Marvel's in there, but Kingdom Come is not? I would have put Kingdom Come in there before Marvel's.
Kingdom Come is number 40.
That's mind-boggling.
And what's mind-boggling about it is the edition that they talk about for Kingdom Come is actually, seriously, almost identical to the Watchmen slipcase, the Marvel slipcase. Presentation-wise, it's almost identical. So where do you draw the line there?
Oh, apparently, they don't feel that the story, and it can't be the art, because that would mean that they're saying that the Alex Ross art is not worthy of a top 10 spot. So it's got to have something to do with, I guess, what they feel the story tells, which, again, is just astounding, especially when we get to what number one actually is.
And that is...
Drum roll, please.
The number one, according to the Wizard Top 100 trade paperbacks of all time, the number one trade paperback is... Mouse, A Survivor's Tale.
Yeah, wait, what?
The Pantheon hardcover.
Number one?
Number one.
That just completely invalidates that entire list as far as I'm concerned.
Not saying that Mouse is a bad story.
Not at all.
Not saying it's not deserving of being in the top 100. Probably in the top 20 or 25, maybe.
Actually, be honest with you, I could see maybe it having a home somewhere in the top 10, only because it does have an importance in a societal way, because a lot of schools use it as a teaching medium in like colleges and advanced English classes.
Right,
and stuff
we should
like that.
Probably say what it is then.
So, sure, go ahead.
It's Art Spiegelman's World War II Nazi.
You stink.
It's Art Spiegelman's World War II account. It's Art Spiegelman's personal account of surviving a World War II Nazi concentration camp, where he's turned the Jews into mice and the Nazis into cats and these other things. It won all sorts of critical acclaim and all kinds of awards and everything like that. It's a fantastic piece of literature and a piece of art. And we are not in any way slighting this book, this material, in any way.
No, again, I said I think it's a great book. I said I think I can even see a spot for it potentially in the top 10 because of the influences that it's had and how it's used and the boundaries that it crosses.
That's not why.
But I don't see it in the top one.
That's not
but
why.
But I do have to say, I want to give... Shut up. I do have
That's
to say...
That's not why. Why are we not addressing this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You are afraid to say what you're really thinking.
I'm not thinking.
Yes,
anything.
You are.
You're
what you're thinking?
Something.
No.
You're implying something.
No, you're afraid to say because it's about the Jews.
It's nothing to
that
do
it
with
has
the
to
Jews.
Be number one. That's what you're afraid of.
I am not afraid of that.
You're afraid if somebody's going to hear
way,
this. You're afraid someone's going to hear this
look,
and hear you saying that. It look, if it wasn't about the Jews,
look,
it wouldn't be number
gotten,
one.
We've already gotten hate mail. We can cross that off our little checklist. It's not that at all. I do want to say, though, I guess maybe kudos to Wizard for putting something that is unsuspected in the number one spot. It's kind of like MTV doing the top 100 videos of all time, and number one is always Thriller. So the obvious number one would always be Watchmen, but...
I guess, well, I mean, I guess if Wizard's doing this, I guess Mao's was one per case in the assortment of trade paperbacks that this came out in.
No, that would be if Toy Biz was distributed.
Oh, I was confused.
Not Wizard.
Wizard 2? Wait, Wizard... Wait, Toy Fair?
Yeah, something like that.
Wait a minute.
But... yeah, that's shocking to me that's number one, that's considered the number one book. And packaging, I don't think really has an effect too much in that one, right? Because the packaging is nothing extraordinary or outstanding.
It's a regular.
So that one really
it's a regular
is
collected. It's all the
content.
Story. It's all the Mao's stories, which I think are there's three volumes. I think collected into one book. I think that's the book that they're referring to here. It's either two or three volumes collected. I can't remember. It's interesting. Like I said, though, this is something that Wizard does to create conversation like the one that we're having here. So the kudos to Wizard is congratulations, you've successfully created conversation.
I guess, but it seems self-defeating then. It seems to defeat the purpose.
Were there any other ones that we thought were missing? American Flag Volume 1, which I was stunned wasn't in the top 20 at the very least, was actually number 90.
Well, like we said already, I would have put V for Vendetta in the top 10.
V for Vendetta does not appear on the list at all.
I would have put Stardust maybe in the top 10.
Stardust.
Neil Gaiman's Stardust.
Neil Gaiman's Stardust does not appear here. However, Neil Gaiman's Mighty Midnight Days does.
Okay.
So that's odd.
Well,
they have Hellboy, The Chain Coffin, and others on here, yet the definitive Hellboy story,
right,
which is the first story, doesn't appear on the list. Yet every single Hellboy trade paperback is exactly the same format-wise. So how do you pick that one? I mean, is that story, those stories, are they better than the original story? I don't think so.
Monkeys in an office with darts. That's how they pick them.
Well, I wouldn't say monkeys. Perhaps in an office with darts, but not monkeys.
Sorry.
Death, the High Cost of Living made the list, which is cool,
right,
at 24.
Right.
That one I thought was really good.
Well, I don't know. I think we need to leave this. I think you guys out there need to maybe come up with your own top 10. See what you think. See how you feel. If you want, shoot it to us. Let us know. We'll talk about them. But I think there's nothing else to be said.
I think
Mouse is in the number one spot.
I think it's an interesting list. That's for certain.
Sure.
Wizard never short on controversy.
Sure.
And that other magazine they produce. What is it? Wizard 2? Something, toys.
The search for more toys.
Something with toys in it.
Yeah, something with toys in it. That's what it's called.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com, where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's Big Kev's Geek Stuff. I fucking hate you guys.
It's just one of those days. What did you think should be number one on the list?
Watchmen. Ultimate Watchmen. Absolute Watchmen. Absolute Watchmen should have been number one.
Rorschach much younger.
But see, they must have done that list. They must have did that list like 6 to 8 months ago. Because
this is criticized for being a revised list.
Yeah,
It was what it should have been criticized was for being a stupid idea. Criticized for that.
Exactly.
So we're introducing tonight a hopefully a frequent guest of this program.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be Retailer X.
Bum, bum, bum.
To protect the anonymity of Retailer X, we have obviously named him Retailer X because that is not the name he came with. And we are also disguising his voice so that so that the powers that be that listen to this fine program will not find out who Retailer X is and seek repercussions upon him or her.
Retribution.
Yes, retribution. Yes. So, Retailer X, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And what we want to do, Retailer X, we're going to talk about specific topics in the comics, the comic retailer sphere of things.
Okay.
But what we want to do tonight with Retailer X is we want to just get a broad spectrum view about what Retailer X is pissed off about in this day and age, being a comic book retailer, being a comic store owner, being a comic, could I say comic a few more times? Being a retailer in this genre in this day and age.
Comic is the episode 10 fantastic.
That's so getting cut.
It's a callback to episode 2.
You stink. So, Retailer X, what is pissing you off? Now, obviously, before you get started, this we tape the show on Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually it makes its way on the internet some 4 or 5 days later.
Right.
But Wednesday, as you may or may not know, is New Comic Book Day. So we're glad to have Retailer X when he is fresh off of surfing the minutiae of being a comic book retailer on a day like today when everything comes in. This is it. All the new books come today.
Right.
And Retailer X has to deal with this week in and week out every Wednesday of his life. Whew. So Retailer X, what do you got? What's pissing you off?
Well, as you know, I have a real hard time with the amount of alternate covers currently coming out into the marketplace.
Right.
Right.
So do we.
And
well, would you say, is it as bad now as it was back in like the early 90s when you had like the nuclear blast covers that like Valiant was putting out?
Prisma foil.
We are on the cusp of that happening again. Marvel's been doing it for a while now.
Okay.
Now DC's doing it. And everybody kind of expects Marvel to be
the douchebag of the industry.
A little bit more. Marvel's not perceived as organized as DC is. So DC ends up being the legitimizer.
Okay.
You know, as soon as they start rolling out Batman and Superman covers, then it's like the party's on.
Right.
Just like when the Death of Superman came out and it was cool to charge $20 for books the day they came out.
You know, right.
That was like the beginning of the end. That's when everybody thought it was easy money to be a comics retailer. Then like there were 5,000 retailers, then there were 12,000 retailers, then there were like 2,000 retailers. You know?
Right.
So it happened really fast.
Yeah, I mean that's something that, you know, you have a conversation with Retailer X, he'll tell you he's a dying breed.
Sure.
I mean, you've seen the number of your brethren fall off dramatically in the last 10 and 15 years. Do you think it's from stuff like all this alternate cover bullshit?
Yeah, I do, actually. I really do. You know, when you're the industry rebuilt itself on good stories.
Right.
Right.
You know, and good art. You know,
coming off of the glut.
Coming back.
Right.
You know, everybody decided, you know, a lot of the Image guys came down and they started getting their books out and they started working really hard. Jim Lee, perfect example of that.
Sure.
Coming off of that glut of the late 80s that we often discuss on here.
So when you have good stories and good art, people stick with the hobby, with the reading hobby.
Right.
But what happened in the last glut is there were too many alternate covers, too many crossovers, and guys would just burn out and just leave the hobby completely because they didn't want to have half of what they wanted. You know, they couldn't handle it. They just left the hobby. And then years later, over the last couple of years, I haven't been into a comic shop in 8 years. I haven't been into a comic shop in 6 years. I haven't been into a comic shop in 10 years. You know, and now here we go again.
Just when the base is rebuilding itself.
Sure.
Marvel, I'll lay it square at Marvel's feet. I don't care. No, fantastic. Stop saying that I say too much about Marvel, because you have to lay it square. No, you have to lay it square on their feet. Fantastic. It's at their feet, because they are the ones who are the mainstream company who is making the most or making as many mistakes as is humanly possible, bringing us back into that glut.
Well, what I want to ask Retailer X is it worse now that the individual companies seem to have control of this alternate cover thing that's going on? Because for a while, it was like third-party companies that were coming in and reproducing these books with alternate covers, like Dynamic Forces did it for a while, where every major book from every major distributor had some sort of alternate cover that they put out. Is it worse now that Marvel has control of it again and DC has control of it again? You don't really see Dynamic Forces too much doing that as much.
It's been a little bit, it's been easing into it because of Marvel and DC's activity.
Okay.
If you remember, Valiant built their company on that stuff. Uh-huh. That was done as like fan reward. If you know, you push their books and you read their books and you got it to the people, and it's just like a reward for being involved in building Valiant as a company.
Right, right. Okay.
You know? And then it was just like, you know, they were printing things like a couple hundred copies. They were limiting the number of copies and how they got out there. But then, like, Marvel was the first one to take their like gold cover thing and just slap it on a regular book.
Right, right.
You know, a regular $2.99 title would come out $3.99 with the gold that was like a knockoff of like the real Valiant alternate thing was actually pretty difficult to get for fans and stuff like that.
It's pretty, and it's getting pretty rampant. You and I, Matt, you and I have discussed this a bunch of times. How do you feel as a retailer when you get a book like Black Panther number 2 that has an alternate cover?
Well, the real use of alternate covers right now is a strategy to get more copies placed out into the marketplace of the regular book.
Right.
So they're out there for people to read, because stuff's been selling out quickly. Retailers are kind of stretched and they're ordering pretty tight, and stuff is selling out. DC's out of repairing everything under the sun recently. Marvel's gone back to press on a ton of stuff. So it's a little, you know, it's a little tough from that aspect, but you know, those alternate covers are geared to getting additional copies out there, which is a good thing, because if you sell the alternate cover at an inflated price, then you're financed having those copies on the rack. It kind of eases the burden on us a little bit, but I think in the long term, you're damaging the marketplace, because are you going to get our calls about which alternate cover? It just becomes about that. It just,
right.
You know, it starts to dominate the discussion.
Let's move away from alternate covers for a little bit. What do you think about this trend that is happening now with collecting issues into the trade paperback format?
I mean, that's okay. I mean, you know, it's really all about the customer. You know, the customer wants it in a format that it's easy to handle. I mean, you know, but the individual issues, I'll see you six times a year.
Right.
Paperback. I'll see you, see you next fall.
it's kind of okay in that sense.
Yeah, it's not really. But a lot of guys are being driven to trade paperbacks because individual issues aren't always available.
Right, right.
And current storylines are going to be crazy, which is why you know, DC has a lot invested on getting 52, the weekly series, going, because if there's not copies out of the first dozen or so issues, it's going to hurt the rest of the year of the plan
right.
of the book.
Well, I've heard a lot of chatter that the trade paperback format is really the format that books are going to start going in general. You're going to start seeing less individual issues and instead bigger trades or bigger collections. Have you seen anything like that, or do you think that's better or worse? Or
I don't think the regular magazine comic book will ever go away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still my preference. I still like reading stuff every week.
Sure.
If I had to wait 8 months between issues of 100 Bullets or something like that,
right?
I'd probably just lose interest and stop or spoon my eyes out or something.
I don't think you'll ever see Spider-Man go away or X-Men go away from a regular weekly book or individual issue type book.
I'd like to see some Spider-Man and some X-Men titles go away.
Yeah, well,
I think Retailer X would back me in that.
Yes. But what you're saying about trade paperbacks is, like, we all know Kevin loves sitcoms also.
Right.
But he wouldn't fall in love with series if their seasons were coming out on 4-disc DVD packages
right.
every year and a half.
Right.
Good point.
Okay.
That's true. I wouldn't.
I never even thought to make that correlation, but I guess that's the equivalent.
And it wouldn't stop me for a second from buying those four-disc collections if I did like the show. When I stroll into Comic Store X, I go right to Retailer X's trade paperback section.
Sure.
And I always check out things that I perhaps may not have read prior, and I'm always looking for something interesting to read in the trade paperback section. All right, let's move on from comic books. Let's move into the wonderful wide world. I'm gonna sit away from Retailer X for a little bit because I've seen the top of his head come off and it's not pretty.
Okay,
Retailer X, how do you like the toy industry? Watch him. Fantastic! Get the fire extinguisher. Retailer X's head is about to burst into flame like Ghost Rider. Don't hold back, Retailer X.
I actually collect a toy line, as you know.
Yes,
and
I've heard.
A store, I can order what I want, but between me and three other of my friends who look for stuff for me,
right.
I don't have stuff I want. Like regular stuff.
Right.
Because there's one case, one every 44 cases. Remember you went to the store and we opened up that case and it was the one in 44 case Daredevil?
Yeah, the yellow Daredevil?
The yellow Daredevil.
And you got on your knees and held it to your forehead, you know, like you didn't, were getting baptized
no,
for the first time.
That's not what happened. That never happened. I never got on my knees and cried about a toy. Wait, did you say cried? Wait, no.
I didn't.
No one said cried. That never happened.
It was juice.
Right, yeah. Ew.
I cut onions right before we went to the store.
That's what
and some of it was in my eye.
It was a voodoo
I wasn't crying. It wasn't crying. It was onions. I made onions. That was embarrassing.
It was a little
bit. But yeah, the way the toy industry now, it's really about Target and Walmart and sometimes Toys R Us.
Very rarely
about
Toys R Us.
Well, because I would think that where Toys R Us probably can afford to or can handle to have peg warmers, stuff that just sits on their shelves forever, that's got to be really frustrating and hard for you and for the smaller retailer. Right? It's got to kill you guys, I would think, and probably discourages you from ordering certain
things. Yeah, I mean, there's really no reason to have toy assortments anymore.
Right.
You know, way back when we were all collecting superpowers figures.
Mm-hmm.
And that Whoa. Stuff was...
Way to show your age.
Yeah, 20 odd years.
Darn, now they will figure out who Retailer X is.
I did get in late to superpowers, but you know, I was already mostly gone by the time I figured it out. But toys are made an ocean away.
Right.
But, you know, I think we got the toy manufacturer on IM Chat right now. So, if you wanted to make changes to the figure, like I can hold it up to the webcam and you could look at it. There's no reason to have toy assortments anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's doing it right now, do you think?
Jeez. DC Direct has to be the closest.
Exactly. I said the same thing. I was hoping he'd say that because I was going to have to be like, no, stop.
Well, those DC Direct did change some of the case assortments lately. They're like doing weighted case assortments.
They are?
Spotted that, yeah. Yeah, I'm not a little nervous about that, but I really like the way they were doing it now.
What did they do that in? What line?
I'd have to look that up. I don't remember.
You'd have to look that up.
It was weighted with the Batmans.
Uh-oh.
Really?
Yeah, like Uh-oh. Three Batmans. But they tell you what's going to be in there, so at least you can make the judgment call.
Oh, okay. You mean like specialty cases?
Yeah.
But well, they don't...
I don't think they're offering a flat case on that one like they had been doing.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I smell
that's
Mattel
bizarre.
Influence there with the weighted Batman.
No, I don't think so. I think they're experimenting.
Yeah.
You know, I think
we have to get right on slope. We have to get right on George about that.
It's a slippery slope though.
I would like to see DC Direct offer cases of the single figure at the same break they give you for buying cases of the assortment.
Right.
You know.
Because right now,
load up on Superman's at Christmas time.
Right now you are able to order DC Direct as complete lines. So in other words, if they put out a line that has five characters in it, or is it four or five?
Well, they've been putting out five.
Right.
The fifth figure you can only get in case quantity.
Right, if you buy the whole individual figures. Right.
Which I think is great.
Can DC Direct put out a case of figures where every single figure in the case stands?
Oh, we're long past that.
Are we?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we are.
No.
No, one of them don't stand.
You're opening.
No, anytime they put out a female figure, it pretty much is guaranteed to fall.
That's because you're opening things that are not meant to be open.
All figures are meant to be open.
Oh, really, Poser? You're going to open up your Star Wars collection?
Excuse me, retailer. Let me clip this in the bud right here.
Listen, all figures should have the ability to be opened.
That's not what you just said.
They're meant to be opened.
That's not what
Whether
you said.
Whether you choose Japanese? To open them is a different story.
Poser.
But they're meant to be opened. All figures should be able to be opened and played with and displayed if you choose to.
Because
you don't have a whole wall of figures in your little office over
no,
there?
No, it's not a whole
Japanese
wall.
Japanese action figures you can get out of the package. The packages are made so you can open them up and get the toy out and put it back in if you wanted to. So you could get the whole package nice if you wanted to.
Which DC Direct actually tried. With the Crime Syndicate figures and that other line that came out right around then, it was resealable packaging. And it failed miserably for DC Direct.
Well, was that a great line to do that with?
No, but obviously not. But that wasn't a great line
public
to
enemies,
do.
The McGinnis Public Enemies figures might have been a little bit, you know, with a nice Batman and a nice Superman, and then they might have found a little bit more success with
right.
that.
Maybe. Right. Maybe. But I agree with Retailer X. I think DC Direct is probably the only company now. And what's great about DC Direct, too, is probably the only company now that's doing it right, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Retailer X. I think DC Direct is the only company that's doing it right
okay.
right now.
Yeah, well, DC can find a justifiable way to do 100 Batmans.
Right.
You know.
But they are doing it in the sense – what I mean by doing it right is in the sense that they are not slaves – to the mass market. They're not slaves to Walmart. They're not even in Walmart. They're in specialty comic book shops, specialty stores where they belong.
No kitchen sinks either.
Right. You don't. Well, now and again, Flight Suit Batman in the Jim Lee line.
Yeah, but that actually appeared in the book. So it
I'm not saying it didn't appear in the book.
That takes away the kitchen sink status, though.
No.
The Superman car with the shooting fists appear in the comic too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that a case could be made that the Flight Suit Batman
right.
was a poor choice.
Okay.
Where there had to be at least one other character that they didn't do in that storyline that could have been done instead of doing. Oh my God, we have to do another Batman. Let's do him.
But at least it appeared in the book, unlike some of the Batman animated figures where you
right.
have Batman in the super freeze Destructo armor that's never appeared in a single episode
you
of the cartoon.
Really,
that would be a kitchen
right,
sink.
But you're really underplaying it because right. it's some. Out of 100 figures, 99 right. of them have never appeared in anything
right.
except toy form.
Right.
So,
Anyway,
what else is bugging you, Retailer X?
Well, is there anything in the gaming segment? I mean, because you know,
games are pretty good right now.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of games are really good. WizKids keeps getting games launched really well, and then standing on their necks and shooting them in the head. But
right,
they really killed Pirates.
Yeah. Oh, you think so?
Oh, they
Pirates is a show favorite of ours.
Pirates got off to a really good start, but then there was no product for months.
Right.
And
now they're going to kill you with product,
but
by
now,
the way.
But
I
now the product
that.
Is coming out every couple of months.
Well, it's now.
Is it too late?
Guys are really iffy on, what are they calling it? Davy Jones's.
Curse of Davy Jones.
Supposed to be out already. Yeah. We're supposed to get ours. We didn't get ours yet.
So I've already heard a couple complaints that of a fantasy element into up at that point was, you know,
right.
a historically based game, basically.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, you could always choose not to play the game with those elements.
Right. I mean,
but that's not how we work. You know, our
right.
brains don't work that way.
You know what this is? You know, and we
you
hate
can't,
to.
You can't do 1, 2, 3, and then 5.
Right.
Because your brain's always going to go 4.
Right.
Dude, 4.
Well, we don't
want
it.
4. You want 4. You need 4.
Right.
You should have had 4. You got 4 of the 10 other things you collect. Why not 4 of that?
We don't want to say that.
Curse.
We don't.
Number 4. You don't like it, but you need it because you have everything.
We don't want to say that trend may be influenced by any major motion pictures, because we might be talking about that's some fun, sort of.
But there's enough historical stuff in there. They could probably do like 10. They could probably crank out an expansion a month through the release of the next two movies on real stuff.
Right, we agree. I think it's a way that they've chosen to go. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really comment. You hear that? I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really comment on it. Well, I'd like to see it.
Well, with so many expansions coming now, whatever the content of those expansions are, do you think that something like Pirates suffers or is going to suffer a similar fate to something like Magic, which was huge, but I think started to choke on expansions after a while? And then there's been a resurgence in it, I think.
Well, you know, they figured it out. You know, Wizards of the Coast went in and spent, they got a boatload of money, and they spent it on good research for like 4 years.
They spent it on TSR.
All that too. But, you know, they picked up TSR for a song out of, you know,
right,
out of bankruptcy proceedings.
right.
You willing to pay this rent? Okay, it's yours.
You can have it.
It's like one of those, the storage unit. You didn't pay your bill, so they're going to auction it off for the cost of the storage unit for the month.
Right.
Yeah, that's terrible. But, and this is something I noticed today. I was reading through previews, making out my little order form. Mm-hmm. And I noticed today that WizKids, since we're on the topic, WizKids is now putting out Pirates of the Spanish Main, the role-playing game.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is it? So, all right, hold on, wait. I have to wrap my mind around this for a second. So is it going to be like, I'm guessing it's going to be like GURPS Swashbuckler with some of the Spanish Main characters and elements built into it?
GURPS Swashbuckler with a sticker on the cover.
Yeah, a big giant sticker that covers the whole front of the book.
Okay. Okay.
And a lot of marker inside where that scratches out GURPS. Well, I want to thank Retailer X for a fine opening salvo against the industry.
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me down here. It's been a lot of fun.
No, and you know, what we want to do is, yeah, definitely, we're going to have him back soon. We're going to get even more specific than we got tonight into some nitty-gritty little issues that that you may be interested in. So check out Retailer X's future appearances.
Sure. And again, I'd like to say, if you have a specific question that you'd like for Retailer X to address perhaps in a future episode, just shoot us an email and let us know. We'll pass it along.
That's true.
But you got to have friends.
Hey, Kev, we finally got a MySpace page.
Ugh.
It's www.myspace.com/BigKev'sGeekStuff.
I can't believe we've sunk to this level.
So go there, join up, become one of our friends.
Ugh, yeah, one of our friends like that awful Tom.
Hi, I'm Tom. I created MySpace.
Kev, how do you know what Tom sounds like?
I was just guessing he would sound like that. Wow, that was quite a heavy segment from Retailer X.
It was, and I think it's probably only to get a little heavier from here on out.
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Ew.
But it was nice having him in the studio, and we certainly look forward to
the studio
having him back again in the future for some more episodes.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into some really specific nitty-gritty with him at Retailer
Definitely.
X.
Definitely.
So, let's see. What did we do today?
Well, in the segment that we're not calling the news, we talked about...
Just won't let it go, fantastic. Just won't let it go.
We talked about the Coraline movie that's coming out, Neil Gaiman book. Looks like it's going to be stop-motion animation in the same vein as Nightmare Before Christmas, James and the Giant Peach, Corpse Bride. Very excited about that because pretty much anything Neil Gaiman does... I'm pretty excited about. I love all of his work.
Did you see Mirror Mask?
I haven't. I really want to, though, because it was Gaiman and the Henson Studio. So
not really excited about that.
Right? I was excited about it. I just haven't had the opportunity to pick up the DVD.
Just saying.
All right.
Get all angry.
Okay. Whatever. We also talked about HBO potentially doing a Preacher miniseries. Preacher being the Garth Ennis, Glenn Fabry, book that was out there for a while. Very popular book, very rabid fan base. It'll be interesting to see how they treat it and what happens. HBO is definitely the perfect venue for it. So
agreed.
So we'll see what happens there. We talked about McFarlane picking up a lost action figure license, which I think is huge. I think it's a huge license for McFarlane to have. I think it'll sell very well. And
I think Hurley will be huge.
That ain't even right. That's a fat joke.
I can make fat jokes.
Can you?
If black people can make black jokes, I can make fat jokes.
I guess that's true.
That's how it works.
It's true.
Just like Fantastic can make pretty boy jokes.
Right. We also talked about the Marvel Civil War book and kind of how we feel about it.
That sprang out of our conversation about 52thecomic.com.
Right.
Number five, number two, thecomic.com, which is a companion website to the DC series 52, which is a weekly series coming out for the entire year, which is supposed to fill in the gap between DC's Infinite Crisis story and their 1 year later titles. All the major DC titles have now gone 1 year ahead. And this 52 book is supposed to fill in what happens in that universe in that time. Interesting concept. I think, like I said, I think the DC thing is kind of straggled, brought us into Civil War, which I liked much better as the Mutant Registration Act, in,
right,
first mentioned in 1981,
right,
as we discovered. And I think it's ridiculous to revisit this type of storyline when they missed it 25 years ago.
Unlike the Young Avengers, at least this brought me in. I'm interested in seeing how it goes. I'm interested to see how it progresses. Once we were done talking about that, we went into the last Star Wars Unleashed line that is out. It's the last three,
right,
figures in the line. Again, we talked about how it's really a shame that it's being canceled and that it's dying. Well, that scale,
right,
in the Star Wars, right, Unleashed line is being canceled and that it's dying after these three figures, and how it's really kind of upsetting that they chose to do another Chewbacca figure. In
right. I wish they had done the full hand, the full five fingers as, yeah, a closing.
Did I say fingers instead of figures? Whatever. I suck. And while we're talking about things being canceled, the last thing we talked about in the segment that we're not referring to as the news would be the cancellation of, or I guess it's not really a cancellation because it never really made it on the air. Mercy Reef, the Aquaman TV series, not picked up by the CW, despite it being almost fully developed for a launch.
And obviously we won't get any action figures out of that either.
Right. We won't. And after that...
What?
You're a bastard and I hate you. Like you've never fucked up before.
I can edit mine out, though.
Yeah, great.
And after that, we got into a great discussion about the Wizard Top 100 trade paperbacks.
Right.
I guess we've kind of decided that we don't really understand the criteria that Wizard picks this list. And we also don't understand how they can possibly make a list like this with new books coming, new trade paperbacks coming all the time. For example, this list really dates itself by not having included Absolute Watchmen, Absolute Hush, these giant oversized jam-packed hardcover slipcase editions of these books that are coming out now that are very popular, and this list doesn't include those. Not to mention the fact they haven't selected what we would consider, or rather, maybe I'll just speak for me, what I would consider a great presentation or a great, again, not understanding the criteria, by choosing Mouse, A Survivor's Tale, as the number one trade paperback. It's certainly not better than, it's not a better presentation than the Watchmen slipcase.
Right, and where Kevin would pick the Watchmen, I certainly would pick, I think, V for Vendetta, probably as the number one spot. But that being said, it did spark conversation and spark controversy. And
which is what,
that's what they were trying to do.
Yeah,
I think
that was the intention there.
After that, we immediately went into our conversation, our Inside the Look,
our first
Retailer X.
First of many, hopefully.
Definitely, yes.
Retailer X being someone who runs a local store.
No, don't.
Oh,
give
I'm sorry.
It, don't give it away.
I'm sorry.
He's Retailer X. He's anonymous.
Right. Retailer X, who owns his own store, and
in Iowa,
exactly. And we got to go through some of the trials and tribulations about what it's like and what he sees
right.
from a perspective that we don't see as the customer,
and what it's like to be an African American comic book retailer who is gay in this country in this day and age.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
In Iowa.
In Iowa. And I think that probably wraps it up. Can we call this an episode? Can we say this wraps up the episode?
You know how he feels about that.
Okay. So we can wrap up this thing we call a podcast, Geek Stuff X. And
Episode X.
Episode X. Geek Stuff X,
Jason Mr. Fantastic,
X,
any final X. Any final words before he goes through everything that ever had X in the title?
No.
And on that note, we cue the music.